Countries of war could spill over into the entire region, calling for the paramilitary forces to be designated as a terrorist organization. Hello everyone from the studios in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, Iran's president has returned to the country after attending the 78th session of the United Nations General Assembly. Ebrahim Raisi has brought back thousands of historical clay tablets from the U.S. dating back to the Persian Achaemenid Empire.
Thanks to proper follow-ups by the Ministry of Cultural Heritage, Tourism and Handicrafts, the permanent mission of Iran to the United Nations, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the tablets of the Achaemenid Empire, which were being kept in the United States and the Center for East Asian Studies at the University of Chicago for 84 years, were repatriated to Iran. The tablets were originally supposed to stay there for 3 years to be studied. It is questionable why the tablets were in the position of Americans. The scientists who worked on the tablets were Iranian and studied them for more than 3 years. They should have returned the tablets to Iran. Due to the follow-ups, we have brought 3,500 clay tablets.
Raisi added that the tablets will be delivered to Iranian museums to be put on display. He also touched upon other achievements of his trip. Raisi said the centerpiece of his UN speech and meetings was clarifying Iran's positions and securing its national interests. He noted that the promotion of Iran's relations with other countries, as well as regional and trans-regional organizations, was also amongst the main topics he discussed with the world leaders. Raisi also berated Western countries for making miscalculations about Iran.
They portray a false image of Iran. Media and officials in Iran should show the true image of the Islamic Republic so that miscalculations do not occur. Wrong decisions made by the West toward Iran are rooted in miscalculations and such false images. The great Iranian nation has achieved grand victories and made substantial progress, but the West seeks to distort the image of the Islamic Republic.
Raisi said during his trip he drew the world's attention to how the Iranian nation managed to thwart enemy plots and overcome a hybrid war in the wake of the 2022 riots. The months-long riots erupted last September after a young Iranian woman died at a hospital days after collapsing at a police station. A forensic investigation dismissed the allegations that she was beaten at the police station and attributed her death to an underlying medical condition. Families of the victims of a 2018 terrorist attack in Iran's southern city of Ahvaz have filed a lawsuit against a number of U.S. officials and administration for their role in the crime. The lawsuit has been submitted to a Tehran court. 32 high-ranking U.S. officials, including then-President Donald Trump, are amongst the defendants. According to the judge overseeing the case, two U.S.-backed separatist armed groups committed the terrorist act, enjoying Washington's logistical support. The families of the martyrs hold Washington accountable for abetting and equipping the terrorists. They also demand damages. 25 people, including a 4-year-old child, were killed and some 60 others injured in the terrorist operation during a military parade in Ahvaz in September 2018. Ali Loy Mubagheri was one of the victims of the 2018 terrorist attack in the city of Ahvaz. He was also one of Iran's disabled veterans of the Iraqi-imposed war in the 1980s. His daughter appeared in the Tehran court and raised their family's grievance with respect to acts of terror and Washington's sponsorship. The victim's daughter said her father had already been targeted in a U.S. terrorist attack against the Iranian naval fleet in the Persian Gulf in 1987 and taken captive by American forces. She underscored the U.S. troops' quote, inhumane and excruciating torture of her father as an instance of an act of terror. She said the United States also sought to kill her father inside Iran after he was released from captivity. The daughter also touched upon her father's murder in the terrorist attack of September 2018.
The September 2018 terrorist assault in Ahvaz was the fourth of its kind targeting my father, but it was not directly carried out by the U.S. and its agents. My 51-year-old father was assassinated in his hometown by mercenaries hired by the United States. Tragic was the fact that my father had already suffered inhumane and excruciating torture at the hands of U.S. troops, but he was assassinated by hirelings and traitors in front of our own eyes.
She said before her father was assassinated in 2018, he had been confined to a wheelchair and suffered acute medical conditions due to the torture he had gone through at the hands of U.S. soldiers. The daughter said separatist groups have so far assassinated over 500 Iranian Arabs like her father in Khuzestan with the support of the United States government and certain European countries such as Britain. The lawsuit filed against some U.S. officials for their role in the 2018 terrorist attack in the Iranian city of Ahwaz was the focus of our news review program. Let's see what our guests had to say.
Shabir Rizvi is a political commentator joining us from Chicago. We also have Ali Salam, who's an editor-in-chief of Basira Press, joining us from Tehran. Welcome to you both. Shabir Rizvi, first I'll start with you. If you listen to this piece of news, maybe within the Islamic Republic it could be understandable and some surrounding countries, but I'm guessing if somebody in the West is listening to this, they are just completely flabbergasted and deem it to be unbelievable in terms of the content. But yet there is evidence that points towards how the U.S. Has in one way or another supported these groups, which we'll get into in a minute. What do you think about the fact that this has been leveled against the U.S. For the people who have lost their loved ones in that terrorist attack that happened in Ahwaz?
Yeah, for sure. I think, first of all, thank you, Assalamu alaikum, thank you for having me. I think the United States public is intentionally kept in the dark about the various crimes of its own government. In the eyes of the regular American that, went to, a public school, for example, lives in, the capitalist American system, the U.S. government can do no wrong. So they have no idea about just the extent of the crimes and what the United States government is capable of doing. And these are just kind of just some tactics and strategies that honestly started as far back as the Cold War, using proxies, using, insurgent armies, using terrorists to kind of create societal havoc. And so what we see that's actually very common practice now that honestly doesn't take a lot of research to see is that the United States hands in these terrorist attacks, their fingerprints are all over them, right? If you trace the source of these terrorist attacks, if you interrogate, the perpetrators, and you do it successfully, they'll all reveal who they were trained by. If they weren't trained directly by the United States, then they were trained by a proxy of a proxy of a proxy by the United States. It goes very deep, and it goes into places that are unimaginable that have even yet to be exposed. So I think, it warrants an investigation. It warrants a stay in court. It warrants being exposed, because if these practices aren't exposed, not only are the American people going to live in complete ignorance of the crimes of their own government, but their government's going to be able to conduct these horrific terrorist attacks day in and day out for as long as they possibly can.
Well, one of the things that's very alarming, Ali Salman, I'm not too sure how she got this information, but that's besides the point, was the fact that this daughter, whose father was assassinated, said that over 500 Iranian Arabs, like her father in Khuzestan, with the support of the U.S. government and certain European countries, was assassinated. Now, this goes back to a point I'd like to make about something that came out in the news back in 2007. It's a simple Google search will bring it up, where it was a CIA-funded operation of which it had a budget allocated to create wave of unrest in the ethnic minority border areas of Iran. And in that listing, you have the Kurds in the west, the Azeris in the northwest, and the Ahwazi Arabs in the southwest. Even Fred Burton, the former U.S. State Department counterterrorism agent, said latest attacks that happened at that time inside of Iran fell in line with U.S. efforts to supply and train Iran's ethnic minorities to destabilize Iran. So we can see that this existed. Of course, it also takes it to another level where the U.S. trains it, but then we know the CIA has done that in Syria when it comes to terrorists also. What do you think about this particular piece of information?
First, may Allah have mercy on the family of the martyrs, especially the orphans. who were created by this terrorist attack and whose the blood of their families goes onto the hands of the Americans and the Israelis. So this is, as our respected guest said, is fully in line with American policy to use ethnic and sectarian divisions in order to destabilize countries that they want to control and take over. So in this case, they use ethnic separatism. And the reason, one of the main reasons, is because Iran as a country, in its geostrategic position as a whole, when it's as it is, with its sovereignty and borders intact, is a very strong country, is a very resource-rich country. And those resources make it, and it's a self-fulfilling cycle. When you have a lot of resources, it continuously makes the country strong. Iran has a lot of manufacturing thanks to these resources, which give people jobs. We can see, for example, the exact opposite of such an economy just right next door in Lebanon, where there's no manufacturing, and we can see the miserable situation there. They have no exports, and because they have no exports, they have no foreign currency reserves, no electricity. So Iran is in a very healthy economic position, even with all its economic problems, yes, because of sanctions and some other issues. It's still in a very strong position. People have jobs, there are factories. Even with the inflation, it's still a prosperous economy. You shatter up this country into a million different pieces based on ethnic and sectarian lines. Some regions, which have, for example, oil, will be rich, or other regions that have maybe minerals will also be rich. But there will be some regions that don't have any resources, that don't have any minerals or oil, and they will be poor. And the ones that are resource rich will be strong. And then the agents of the Zionist regime and America will then convince each small statelet to fight against each other and to be consumed in the task of shedding each other's blood, which will then enable essentially the larger superpowers to take over and subdue this country and to cause massacres and to suck the lifeblood out of these tiny little statelets via crippling IMF loans and World Bank loans, and then, of course, implementing their kind of liberal monoculture, consumer culture that will erase all the beautiful cultures of this region. So this agenda of divide and conquer, federalization, or breaking up into little statelets is done because they are very afraid of Iran as a strong power as it is today.
Thank you for that, Ali Salam, Editor-in-Chief, Basira Press, and Shabir Rizvi, political commentator from Chicago. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review.
Addressing the 78th UN General Assembly session, the Palestinian president has come down hard on Israel, condemning the regime's atrocities in the occupied territories.
The Israeli racist right-wing cabinet continues its attacks on our people and through its army and its racist terrorist settlers, continues to intimidate and kill our people, destroy homes and property, steal our money and resources, and detain the bodies of the martyrs. More than 600 bodies are being kept in Israel. Why? I don't know.
Mahmoud Abbas also denounced what he called Israel's apartheid policies. He said the racist regime continues its deadly attacks against Palestinians with complete impunity as the international community remains silent. Abbas also accused the international community of adopting a double standard approach when it comes to Israel by refusing to respond to the regime's crimes. He stressed that peace in West Asia will not be possible without the recognition of the full rights of Palestinians.
Whoever thinks peace in the Middle East is possible before our people achieve their full national rights is delusional.
Abbas called for an end to Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories and the realization of the independence of the fully sovereign state of Palestine. He also slammed the U.S. and some European countries for their reluctance to recognize Palestine as an independent state. No end in sight to Israeli crimes against Palestinians. A Palestinian youth or young man, has been shot for attacking an Israeli soldier at a rail station in the occupied East outwards. According to local sources, the attacker is in serious condition, while the Israeli soldier has been slightly wounded. The Hamas resistance movement hailed the operation as a message to the occupying regime. It said Palestinians cannot stand idly by in the face of Israel's acts of aggression and religious war against them. Earlier on Thursday, the regime forces arrested a Palestinian man for ramming his car into a checkpoint in Qalandia, east of Al-Quds, injuring an Israeli soldier. Sudan's army chief has raised the alarm about the possibility of the country's months-long war spilling over into other regional states. Abdel Fattah al-Burhan was addressing the 78th United Nations General Assembly session. Burhan warned that if the war continues, it will have a direct impact on regional and international peace and security. He also called on the international community to designate the paramilitary rapid support forces as a terrorist organization, saying they have committed all sorts of crimes. The RSF commander, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also addressed the UN session through a video message. He said his forces are fully prepared for a ceasefire and to engage in comprehensive political talks to end the conflict. The war in Sudan has so far killed more than 7,000 Sudanese while displacing some 5 million people since it started in mid-April. Iraq's prime minister has reiterated that the country does not need the presence of foreign combat forces to deal with terrorist groups. Mohammad Shia Sudani said Iraq's own security forces are capable of maintaining order. He made the remarks in an interview on the sidelines of the 78th UN General Assembly session. As Sudani said, Baghdad, however, supports international efforts against terror groups like Daesh and believes in joint training and information exchange programs. The United States currently maintains some 2,000 troops in Iraq under the pretext of assisting Iraqi forces in fighting terrorists. The U.S. claims that its military presence in Iraq and West Asia is aimed at countering Daesh terrorists. Regional countries, however, have repeatedly raised the alarm about the U.S. efforts to reactivate Daesh. Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Thank you for being with us.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. in the limelight.
As the Zionist regime heads in its terrifying direction, the British government promotes legislation that sends out the message that the Zionist regime can pursue its illegal settlements program with all the horrifying settler violence that goes with it, with total impunity. The anti-BDS bill trashes the UK's global reputation, yet Sunak's morally broken government is pushing it through without serious scrutiny. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, this week, British Foreign Secretary James Cleverly will receive a welcome from the Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as he visits the occupied territories on a mission to build trade links. But the truth is that the British government has already given Netanyahu everything he could possibly want, and more. Consider the 2030 roadmap for UK-Israel bilateral relations, which ignored the occupation and defined the Zionist regime as a thriving democracy, signed by Cleverly before Netanyahu's visit to London last March. And now we have the abominably named Economic Activity of Public Bodies, Overseas Matters Bill, which entered its committee stage in the Commons last week. It delivers on a central objective of Netanyahu's foreign policy, protecting the Zionist regime against the threat of international isolation by blocking public bodies from supporting sanctions, boycotts, and divestment campaigns against the fabricated regime of Israel. Most unusually, the bill singles out the Zionist regime, the occupied West Bank, and the Golan Heights for special protection. It thus puts not just the Zionist regime, but also the occupied Palestinian territories and the occupied Golan Heights out of reach of the boycott, divestment and sanctions, or BDS movement. And not just that. By conflating the Zionist regime with the territories it has occupied by military force, the bill flatly contradicts existing British foreign policy commitments. Britain is a signatory to the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2334. This resolution, a formal commitment entered into by UNSC member states, calls upon all states to distinguish in their relevant dealings between the territory of the regime of Israel and the territories occupied since 1967. The protection granted to the Zionist regime settlements in the new legislation makes a nonsense of Britain's solemn UN commitments. The bill is being driven through the Commons as Rishi Sunak's morally and politically broken government enters its final month in office. Incredibly, Sunak has pressed ahead in the face of warnings from his own Foreign Office officials that the bill not only contradicts British foreign policy, but actually represents a propaganda gift for other people. As British reported, Foreign Office lawyers advised that a clause in the bill would significantly increase the risk of the UK being in breach of the commitments under UNSC Resolution 2334. In spite of this powerful and highly unusual warning, Sunak ignored this advice and pressed ahead with the bill. And his government is cynically using every trick in the book to push it through Parliament. There are deep problems with the government's management of the committee stage of the bill. As Arib Ola reported for Middle East Eye recently, not a single Palestinian has been invited to give evidence to parliament. Not one, yet a raft of pro-Israeli voices were heard. The Times journalist Melanie Phillips was invited. In her powerful columns, she denies the existence of Islamophobia and is critical even of Jewish critics of the Zionist regime. Phillips has written that there are no good reasons to oppose the bill. In the committee, her views were heard with deep, indeed, sycophantic respect. George Howard, a Labour MP and the chair of the committee, thanked Phillips for her characteristically forthright responses, which have been very helpful. What a telling indication of where Keir Starmer's Labour now stands on Palestine. But no pro-Palestine columnist was brought into balance Phillips. Why not? Here's another example of unfairness. Conservative friends of the Zionist regime gave evidence, but no balancing invitation for Conservative Friends of Palestine, chaired by former cabinet minister Saida Warsi. Again, why not? UK lawyers for the Zionist regime gave evidence, but no balancing invitation for lawyers for Palestinian human rights. Once again, why not? The Jewish Leadership Council gave evidence, but not the British Palestinian Committee, and so on. This fundamental bias became obvious at the very start of the committee stage recently. Committee members were required to make a declaration of interest as demanded by Commons rules. The revelations were astonishing. 7 of the 10 Conservative MPs on the 19-member committee said they had visited the occupied territories on trips organized by Conservative Friends of Israel. 6 of them revealed that they were personal friends of James Gard, executive director of Conservative Friends of Israel and one of the witnesses. 3 of the 7 Labour members of the committee said they had been on trips to the occupied territories organized by Labour Friends of Israel, among them George Howard, the chair of the committee. Just one MP, Labour's Kim Lee Beder, said she had been on a trip organized by the Council for Arab-British Understanding, which stands up for Palestinian human rights. Ever since Netanyahu re-emerged as prime minister of the fabricated regime of Israel last December, events inside the occupied territories, and especially the occupied West Bank, have taken a turn for the worse. Netanyahu has elevated Itamar Ben-Gvir from the status of the Palestinian-hating far-right Kahanist politician to the position of Minister of National Security. By giving Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich control of the illegal West Bank settlements, Netanyahu has broken precedent and accelerated the annexation of the West Bank land. Settler violence has escalated in a terrifying way, and the vast expansion of settlement building is part of a systematic program to make a Palestinian state impossible. Meanwhile, Netanyahu himself has embarked on a program of judicial reform that threatens to dismantle democracy within the occupied territories itself. Yet, as the regime of Israel heads in this terrifying direction, the Sunni government promotes legislation that sends out the message that the Zionist regime can pursue its illegal settlements program with all the horrifying settler violence that goes with it, with total impunity. In the meantime, Wafa News Agency reported Zionist settlers recently attempt to seize a large area of Palestinian-owned lands in the area of Masafer Yatta, south of the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil, under the protection of the Zionist regime occupation forces. Anti-settlement activist Rateb Jabour said that dozens of settlers placed barbed wire around approximately 50 dunams belonging to Al-Hatalin and Zain families adjacent to the illegal Zionist settlement of Karmail in an attempt to seize it with the aim of expanding the settlement. The occupation forces had issued a plan to expand the said settlements at the expense of Palestinian lands located between Om al-Khair and Sadat al-Talah areas, specifically on the eastern side of the aforementioned settlement, while Masafer Yatta is subjected to a continuous attack by Zionist settlers to seize thousands of dunams from Palestinian citizens' lands.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Lady. Well, this is Arab English Radio. I am Asma, and here we have Sister Zainab with us. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Recently we've been talking about the fear of losing dear ones and dear things, as in the people that we have the most of attachments, heartly attachments to them, and also the fear of losing our beauty, the things that we have invested too much of time and money on them, and the things that we feel like as if they define us, like our beauty, like our faith. So we know that as a moderner who lives in this modern world, we would feel this pressure every night, the pressure of overthinking about all of these fears. Is there any way to overcome it?
There are so many ways to overcome these fears. So first of all, we got to understand the root causes of our fears and explore how they are affecting our life. Recognize the irrational beliefs and thought patterns that are contributing to your fear. Accept that life is dynamic, and losses are a natural part of life and human experience.
Even, you know, the psychologists who are the master of these inspirational words, when they get into a problem, when they feel entangled by the loss of a dear one or the loss of their beauty, they would get into dilemmas and problems. Some of them even get paranoid.
It's very important to focus on what you can control yourself.
So how to control? Do you think there is any...
Yes, we should direct our energy and our actions towards what is within our control. Like my mental being is completely within my control. I have to go for exercise. I can go. And my physical health, my mental health, I can focus on developing skills rather than just, you know, focusing on my beauty and just going through those painful injections. I should rather develop some skills and adapt to change. Change is a natural phenomenon of life. Reliance on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is very important. Contentment is very important. We have advised to go for contentment, to practice contentment, and trust His wisdom. Trust Allah's wisdom.
This is the most important part, I suppose.
Yeah.
We have to put our trust on Allah and make sure that whatever happens in the process is the thing that is the best for us.
Right. Meanwhile, we have to work on the triggers, the waswas that happens to us. Because
exactly.
All those, especially the fear of this beauty and all, it comes up from those triggers that waswas we have. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us the way out. He says, whenever you have waswas,
that kind is obsessive of
silkenness, that's why he says silkenness, it's continuously going on and on. And then you should, whether it's from the ants or from the jinn, like whether it's from the human beings or like there are some supernatural powers that are affecting you, that are making you feel like, you know, because it's shaitan always there. You should look more beautiful. You should express your beauty to the outside world and all. So it's like you have to work on this waswas. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, approach me.
Yeah.
قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ. You know, whenever you have this waswas, this trigger, you should approach me, seek rescue in me.
Like the compulsory disorder, when it happens, you just lose the control of everything. Actually, these kind of guys need a real mentor, not just by hearing to these things.
It's very important to seek knowledge.
Exactly.
It's very important to seek knowledge.
And then the first point, I suppose, is to accept it.
Right.
Accept that there is a problem that you are in need of solving it. Because if not, then the consequences might be so dangerous. So let's keep it in here and go for a short break, and then we'll be back. Thank you for being with us. So yes, sometimes life gets very, you know, as in every night you just go through everything. What if this happened? What if that happens? What if this, and many things, you know? And then as we said that as women, we have this obsessive much of feeling and emotions that might get us into terrible. And we talked about some of these terribles, like one of these main branches of overthinking is the thought of the loss of important things and important people. So we talked about how to overcome it. And I guess we need to talk more about it. So right now, you're listening to Muslim Lady. Let's go to Sister Zainab and hear more of her.
Right. So we're talking about how to overcome the fear of losing beauty. Develop a positive self-image of yourself. Accept yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on cultivating a positive perception of your own self beyond your physical appearance. You know, look for the qualities you have. Look for the skills you have. Recognize them. Appreciate them. And look for the qualities you are having. Look for the achievements.
And just to put it in here right now, well, you know, if you do not value your character and personality, nobody would.
Yes.
Even
you
if
don't expect anyone else to be valuing that.
Exactly.
So you have to value the real beauty. We already talked about what beauty means in Islam. We have already discussed a lot about that in this program.
And all of the beauty lays in your soul and in your personality.
And when you understand that real beauty concept, challenge the social, the societal beauty standards and norms.
Yeah.
You are the one. If you have, now you're knowledgeable, go and, you know, just challenge, question that. Question those norms, challenge those norms that promote unrealistic.
And don't get affected by them.
Yes, because those norms, that they promote unrealistic beauty standards. So you should actually promote yourself, surround yourself with the diverse representations of beauty, as we discussed what beauty means in Islam.
Exactly. So to value the beauty that we have from the inside, and to just get engaged in some other activities and in some other things, like seeking knowledge to improve myself, to promote my character and personality. So what more?
Practice self-care.
Mm-hmm.
You take care of your physical health, take care of your well-being. And there's not only just your face that should be looking very nice, or your, like, you should have that fatless belly. Of course you should have, but you should overall regard your physical health and be concerned about it. It's not just the appearance that is visible to the world.
Exactly.
It's you yourself. Appreciate
you
yourself.
You must have a beautiful mind as well.
Right. Engage yourself in the activities that make you feel good, such as exercise, you know.
Yeah.
Eat a balanced diet. It's very important. Get enough rest, self-care, and, you know, boost your self-confidence. That could overall boost your well-being.
Exactly.
There's also one thing that women especially have to appreciate and accept, that is embrace aging.
Yeah.
You know, shift your perspective on aging. It's the world is lying to us. Social media is lying to us. Seriously.
Yeah.
Understand that aging is a natural process and a part of human experience. Embrace the wisdom and maturity and the personal growth that comes in with the age. Should
exactly.
be looking at what comes with age,
yeah,
the achievements
so,
I have,
yeah.
the skills I have developed, or whatever I have earned. So, you know, you have to shift your focus on certain things and things will be fine.
Yeah, when I just see these old women reading books, doing things by their own, and then go for shopping for themselves, I just envy them how knowledgeable they are to understand that, okay, this old age is also a part of my life. And I enjoy that as long as I can have new things, new ideas, and a new way of thinking, a new perspective. So this means too much for a person, specifically for a woman. So if you want to just forget about all the negativity of your overthinkings, I suppose you have to accept all the truths of life, like death is a part of it, like age, old age is a part of it, like wrinkles are a part of it, like many, many, many breaks and ups and downs are a part of your life. So just when you go through overthinking, think about the very fact that, first of all, life is not going to be eternal. It's something transitory. And one day after all, you're going to leave this world for good. You're going to enter another world which is going to last forever. And that is going to be your eternal house. So, and another point, just to say it right here before we go for the next break, I would say that try to work on yourself. The only thing that you can take with you to the other world is the great soul that you carry inside in your body. So the heart and the mind are very important. Try to nourish them with good ideas and with too much of knowledge. Okay, let's go for another break until we get for the last part of today's episode.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Dear listeners of Muslim Lady, welcome back. Well, this is the last part of today's episode. So far, we've been talking about The fear of losing many things, the thing that turns into a trauma and enchants us the night when we get to sleep, and that causes then the lack of sleep, the fact that I cannot sleep, the fact that I have too much of thinking in my thought, even in the morning without other people being able to understand what they are. So I have too much of worrying without anyone noticing that. Fear, all in all, as in speaking of the word itself, is it a bad thing or a good thing?
What is fear? It's a natural response that arises when we perceive a threat, when we have a potential loss. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala kept this within us to serve as a protective mechanism, so we don't have to get paralyzed with it. This natural emotion helps us to alert ourselves towards the potential dangers and motivates us to take action and ensure our safety and well-being. Well, it's very important to know where to have this fear. If it's good, where to have this fear? If Allah had not gifted us with this emotion of fear, we would have not been able to use our intelligence to, you know, overcome many challenges in our lives. So it helps a person to act intelligently and within the framework of reason and also the framework of Sharia. You know, in many events, fear can be a sense of prosperity. If you really are, you know, fearing the loss of beauty or the losing people or, you know, different things, you should rather use this emotion in a positive way. The basis of your prosperity is to fear Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Exactly.
You know, it makes a human being a responsible person and does not allow you to be lazy. Like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Surah Rahman, for those who fear Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in whatever they do, for them are gardens within gardens. So,
yeah, so
we
it's not
have
just
to
one
fare.
Heaven, it is
yeah,
God's doors.
Jannatan, yeah. Which technically means two gardens, but when we contemplate it, it means gardens within the gardens.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, also in the Surah Naziat, in verse number 40 and 41, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, for those who were in a state of fear while standing before their Lord and restrained themselves from evil desires, paradise will certainly be their home. Imam Hussain alayhi salam also says that nobody on the day of judgment will be in aman, in peace, except for those who feared Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
In this world.
Yeah. So fear, you know, take this as
a... Generally is not a bad thing.
Yes. But it's very important where to use it, where to let this emotion come in. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if he kept this within you, like, you know, some women say, I don't want to fear, lose beauty, but Allah kept this within me. So you have to use it at a proper place.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how you
in order
act
to just,
justified, you act in a fair way.
Yeah, to make the best of it at its own time. When you fear the loss of it, then when you have it, you'll protect it. And you'll thank God for it, actually. And you would never go for the evil thought. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight. The rising cost of living is forcing British households to reassess their budgets and cut back to make ends meet. Food inflation remains high in Britain, and the price of basic items has risen significantly. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Campaigners said the cost of some basic food items such as cheese, butter and bread has soared by more than 30% in the last 2 years, forcing poorer households to make desperate choices between keeping up with their bill payments or putting food on the table. According to research by Consumer Body, which shared exclusively with The Guardian, food price inflation has slowed in recent months, but costs remain much higher than they were 2 years ago, disproportionately affecting low-income families. According to the latest analysis by retail industry data provider Kantar, the annual pace of grocery price growth cooled to 14.9% over the 4 weeks to 9th of July, down from 16.5% a month earlier. Despite the slowdown, which figures showed that food prices have risen significantly over the past 2 years, and some products have gone up by as much as 30% since 2021. The food products with the highest rate of inflation are milk with 36.4%, cheese with 35.2%, butter and spreads with 32.2%, cakes and cookies with 31.2%, and bakery items with 30.3%. Vegetable prices are up 19.1% since May to July of 2021. Meat prices are up by 23.6%, and savory pies and pastries and quiches are up 26.2%. Biscuit prices have increased by 27%, and fruit juice and drinks and smoothies are up 28.6%. The Consumer Rights Group is urging supermarkets to stock their cheapest products in their convenience store branches, as well as larger outlets, as charities warned that families were struggling to cope with food inflation. Richard Lane, Director of External Affairs at debt charity Step Change, said, "The rising cost of living is forcing households to reassess their budgets and cut back to make ends meet. Food inflation remains high and has pushed the price of basic items up significantly." Richard Lane added, "These rises are hitting the poorest the hardest, and it creates a poverty premium where those on tighter budgets are unable to save by buying in bulk and end up spending more money on food and essentials as they shop little and often." He added, "As food costs continue to rise, the knock-on effect can be felt elsewhere, with people having to make desperate choices between keeping up their bills or putting food on the table." Website Reddit has also covered the same story. A recent research by Step Change debt charity found 1 in 7 people in Britain had recently skipped meals or gone without a healthy diet in order to keep up with credit repayments, rising to nearly 1 in 3 for those on universal credit. Helen Barnard, Director of Policy, Research and Impact at the Trussell Trust, the Food Bank Network, said, "Inflation is hitting those on the lowest income hardest, with the cost of essentials like food and energy, which account for far more of their budget than is the case for people on higher incomes, rising especially steeply." Helen Barnard added, "The last year, the food banks in its network experienced higher levels of need than ever before, distributing among 3 million parcels to people who could not afford essentials." She said, "Donations also increased, reflecting the public's greater generosity, even at a time of increased financial pressure for many, but rising need outpaced donations. This led to food banks having to purchase 124% more food than they did the previous year, at a time when prices are higher than ever, putting a significant strain on their operating costs." Which has called on grocers to make affordable and healthy basic food ranges available across all of their stores to ensure that offers and promotions are used to support those who are struggling and are targeted at healthy foods, and to make sure their pricing is clear so that shoppers can easily work out what offers the best value. It welcomed an announcement by Tesco on Friday, 11th of August, that the retailer would be introducing cheaper own brand range items in its convenience stores, but said more needed to be done, putting out that own brand items are still more expensive than budget ranges. For example, Tesco's own brand penne pasta is 75 pence for 500 grams, but its budget version is 41 pence. Sue Davies, head of food policy at Which, said, despite well-advertised price cuts, Which tracker shows that the cost of essentials like milk and butter is still very high and piling huge pressure on millions of people, which is why access to budget ranges is more important than ever to help people save money. Sky News has also reported on the same story. The cost of sustenance in the United Kingdom could still remain higher than it was before Ukraine war caused the rate of food price rises to accelerate. Hugh Peel, the Bank of England's chief economist, said, unfortunately, the days of seeing food prices fall, that does seem to be something that we may not be seeing for a little while yet, if at all in the future. Speaking at a question and answer session on the cost of living, Hugh Peel said, even if the rate of food inflation slows down, food will still be more expensive than it had been, with the effects of food inflation going to take longer to dissipate. Official figures show food inflation stood at 17.3% in the 12 months up to June, when the overall consumer price index measure of inflation was 7.9%. Britain has been particularly impacted by rising food prices. Hugh Peel said that impact on food prices in the United Kingdom has been a little bit more long-lasting than would have been expected on the back of past behaviour. He placed the blame at the Russia-Ukraine war, which scrambled the supply chain of staple grown in Ukraine, such as wheat and sunflower oil, and brought up costs of raw materials and basic food items. Hugh Peel said one explanation for why the United Kingdom has been hit hard by this is UK companies responded to the price uncertainty in the wake of the Ukraine conflict by locking in expensive contracts. He said some firms decided to sort of lock in their purchases of commodities in international markets in order to reduce that uncertainty, but potentially locked in at quite high levels of prices, and they're still passing that through the system into what ultimately we're paying for in shops. Hugh Peel added, Price rises will begin to slow as those contracts come to an end and food sub-processors in the United Kingdom adjust to the end of supply disruption.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
For this hour, returning from his UN trip, Iran's president brings back thousands of ancient tablets which were kept in the US for more than 80 years. The Palestinian president condemns the global silence on Israel's crimes, saying there would be no peace in West Asia without the recognition.